Each week at this time, Lucky Strike runs a coast-to-coast quiz party with four eager experts providing the main entertainment. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Police quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, unpremeditated, unrehearsed, unfettered in any way, Information Please continues on its carefree path. Tonight, the sports authority, John Kieran, and the conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams, constitute what might be called the relatively non-musical part of the board. And for the first time in our air history, our two musical know-it-alls, Mr. Oscar Levant and Mr. James Taylor, are seated on the same panel, glaring at each other in what we hope is a friendly manner. Remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we're off, gentlemen, with, just to start us going, a musical question coming from Mr. Joseph Saltzman of Grand Rapids. Get all on this. Now, as it happens, three of the members of the board tonight have been or are pianists. Mr. Adams, you, I believe, are not a pianist.
I am not a pianist at all.
Very well, listen to this anyway. Therefore, three of you at least once took piano lessons as children.
I never did.
Did you never take a lesson in your life?
Never a lesson.
How'd you pick it up?
Pian. I heard him play.
Can't tell. He may surprise you tonight. Now, we're going to have our studio pianist, Mr. Kahn, play for us three pieces that are usually included in the repertory of a child who's studying the piano. And Mr. Kahn will do his darndest to give us a good imitation of the child playing the piano. Identify these pieces. Let's have the first. Mr.
My children aren't up to that yet.
That left you out, Mr.
I don't know what it is. It sounds like a very pretty girl playing.
My teacher has better taste, and I didn't get that far anyhow.
Apparently, you're all prodigies who skipped these early pieces. Does it, Mr. Kieran, does it awaken any...
No, I can't read a note, never took a lesson, can't play the piano.
You can.
Well, that piece was just made for you, then.
Well, that is the Edelweiss Glide by F.E. Vanderbeck. No?
I'm glad
Comes
I
back
was
to you now.
Child.
Got that wrong, eh? Uh-huh. All right, we'll count that wrong. I see we're going to lose $25 to begin with. Let's go on to the second of these child's pieces. Never seen a blanker look. Mr. Levant?
What is it, the Black Widow Waltz? I don't know.
No. You admit you've heard that before, Mr. Levant.
I think it's mighty pretty.
What?
We had it specially for you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Taylor? Not a thing?
Well, I took classical.
Oh, this is pretty classical. A quarter classical.
A quarter, yeah.
Mr. Kieran, does it mean anything to you? The Maiden's Prayer, that was, gentlemen. Oh. The Maiden's Prayer. Remember it now?
Is that the Maiden's Prayer?
That's the Maiden's Prayer.
I always wondered.
You always wanted to meet her.
No wonder it wasn't answered.
You want to know who wrote the Maiden's Prayer?
No wonder it wasn't answered.
Pardon?
Who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
I don't want to know.
Tekla Badarzewska. That's what it says here. It
serves him right.
All right.
Well, it comes to me out of a clear sky.
All right, that's two wrong out of two. Gives us a clear record so far.
Come on,
The third and last of these.
Oh,
they do know that, by golly. Mr. Taylor.
Fiel Elisa by Ludwig van Beethoven.
What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
That's one from the Abendblatt.
That's right, the Abendblatt.
Yeah, that's right. Purely by Beethoven. Do you want to see how Mr. Kahn can do that when he's at his best? Now he's just been growing up during the last few minutes.
No,
go ahead, Mr. Kahn. Let's see how it sounds.
Too fair.
I've never played that fast.
Stop, it's too fast.
More like my children.
It's a darn sight faster than you were, gentlemen. That gives us two wrong out of three and sends $25 to Mrs. Salton and the Federal Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. If you don't want any more musical questions, gentlemen, just bribe me.
Well, I'd like to have one musical question.
Hold on.
We haven't had any yet.
Oh, you contemn these things, eh? Nora H. Buddy of Cambridge, Massachusetts, sends this one in. Get three out of four. Why would you find a meal composed of these dishes undesirable or unpalatable in any way? Why would you find Mrs. Murphy's chowder unpalatable, Mr. Kieran?
Because somebody threw the overalls in there.
That's right. Is that, how does the song go?
Who threw the overalls in Mrs. Murphy's chowder? Nobody answered. So we only hollered louder.
Now, if you only get that on the piano, it would be a perfect evening. How about the last broth of the cook of the Nancy Bell? Why would that be unpalatable? The last broth of the cook of the Nancy Bell, Mr. Adams?
Too many human beings in it.
Only one in the last one.
Pardon?
There was only one in the last one.
No, I think
eat that cook in a week or less, and as I eat and be the last of his chops, why, I almost dropped. For a whistle inside, I see. The cook was the one who was eating.
You've got me floored, Mr. Jarrett.
How about the Captain Bow?
They were eaten in previous meals.
Yes, but the last broth that the cook made was composed of all the members of the crew except himself. No.
Oh, they'd been gone long ago.
All right. At any rate, as Mr. Adams delicately put it, there were too many human beings in the broth.
And some chopped shallot, which is just as bad.
Just as bad. Now, why would you find a meal composed of the tarts of the Queen of Hearts somewhat unappetizing? The tarts of the Queen of Hearts, gentlemen.
Is it unappetizing?
Yes, in the story it is. Why? Remember, Mr. Taylor?
I know the Knave of Hearts stole them. But...
Yes, but that wouldn't make them unhappy.
No.
No, sometimes stolen sweets are best. Don't quote me.
How you go on.
Well, according to the cook, the tarts were mostly made of pepper, and so they would not be very good
to
eat.
No, it was in the soup.
Oh, no, the tarts were made of pepper.
Speak sharply to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes, and then the pig joined in, wow, wow, wow.
Yes,
I killed him. Part of his pepper in the soup, and the pig kept sneezing.
Yes, why couldn't the tarts have had pepper in them, too?
They still do.
Maybe they did.
I think they did.
I think they did.
I'll check.
Back down.
Why would you find Miss Brewster's wine undesirable, Mr. Adams?
Because there was no old lace in it, but only arsenic.
You're referring to the poisonous wine prepared in the play Arsenic and Old Lace. Do you know exactly what was in that wine, Mr. Adams?
Elderberry and arsenic.
Yes.
Cyanide.
A little cyanide, yes.
A pinch of cyanide.
Just a pinch, be fair to us. And also a little strychnine, gentlemen. A half teaspoon full of strychnine. Well, that gives us...
Pardon? I was to make it savory.
Yes, to give it its taste.
Well, it was very tasty because the last gentleman lived long enough to say this is very good.
As the curtain went down, yes.
Yeah, matinee tomorrow.
That gives us three out of four. How about this one from Catherine Hamley of Philadelphia? Get three out of four on this. Under what name did or does the following people do these things? Under what name did Helen Porter Mitchell sing? Under what name? In other words, what was the name by which we know her? Mr. Taylor.
Nellie Melba.
Yes, Nellie Melba. Her real name was Helen Porter Mitchell. Under what name does Jane Peters act? Jane Peters.
Carol Lombard.
Carol Lombard is right.
It's had one change before Carol Lombard. At first it was Carol without an E, and then it was changed to Carol with an E. A dermatologist or a numerologist told her. I don't remember.
Really?
Now it's Gable.
Wonderful exact information. Under what name does Mrs. Alfred Stieglitz paint? Mrs. Alfred Stieglitz, Mr. Taylor?
It's Georgia O'Keeffe.
Pardon?
Isn't it Georgia O'Keeffe?
Yes, Georgia O'Keeffe is right. The famous woman painter, Georgia O'Keeffe. Under what name did Ovila Chatelaine fight? Mr. Kieran.
Well, I'll give it to Oscar. He knows it.
Well, you know what it's Delaney, Jack Delaney.
Yeah, so who is Jack Delaney?
He was a very good light heavyweight fighter. He used to beat Berlinbach once in a while. Go ahead, John.
Well, that's right.
He retired undefeated.
Pretty weird,
isn't he?
Retired undefeated?
No.
Well, he was not
flat.
Yeah. Nothing like exact information from this side of the fence.
Beaten by Sharkey in the Madison Square Garden.
Beaten by Sharkey. All right.
Saturday, I think, too.
That gives us four out of
Thursday
four.
Night.
Now, gentlemen, how about this one from David Ewan of this city? Get all on this. Here's another musical question, but this is a violin question, gentlemen, not a piano one. Of what larger works are these famous musical pieces a part? We have to get three out of three.
Wish I wasn't here.
let's have the first. These violin pieces. Thank you. Now we have our two musical experts' hands raised. Mr. Taylor, I'll try you first.
Slow movement of a suite for the violin by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yes, suite in
D.
D? In D major, yes.
Yeah, it's called Air for G String.
The Air on the G String, that's exactly
right.
He
put that on, Bach. You know there was going to be a program a couple hundred years later.
What vision?
Called information, please.
No doubt. All right, gentlemen, you're retrieving yourselves rapidly now. Let's have a second of these. See, they're good. Thank you. Mr. Levant.
Well, I took the other one. I think Mr. Taylor ought to take this.
Oh, I think Mr. Taylor took the other one, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. This is the string quartet of Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
It's the Cantabile.
The Andante Cantabile.
Don't leave me the opus number now.
No, I don't know the opus.
I don't either. The string quartet of D major.
He was crying when he wrote that, by when he was writing everything. He always cried.
He did? It doesn't make me melancholy. Maybe it has that effect on cats. Now the third and last.
String quartetters.
I wish I could get our non-musicians
to... Mr. Kieran,
I know that. Of course you know it.
It'll come to you, John.
Yeah, it'll come to me after one of these fellows says.
Mr. Taylor?
L.A.G. by Jules Massenet.
Pardon?
L.A.G.
That's the L.A.G. And where do you find it? What larger work is it a part of?
Music store.
No. See, each of these is a part of a larger work.
A larger work. That's, that's Oscar's...
All right, Oscar.
It was part of something, frankly, I don't remember.
I see. Well, that
an opera?
Around.
Part of an opera.
No, it was no opera.
I don't think it was. I think it was a...
It must have been a dramatic, incidental music.
Symphonic poem or something.
No, symphonic.
No? Poem. How about Les Erinies? Is that what it would be? The Erinies? The name for the
fate. That card? That's
yeah,
right.
That's what it said. That's how you can tell. Well, let's see. We got, one, two, we got all three of them. That's right enough. Now, how about this one from Nora McKee of Hagerstown, Maryland? Get three out of four. Give the source of each of these phrases. They describe what we might call a composite paragon. They're going to make up somebody who has all the advantages. Wondrous wise. Wondrous wise. Mr. Kieran.
What was the question? Pardon me. I know
give the source of the phrase.
Oh, there was a man in our town, and he was wondrous wise. He jumped into a bramble bush and scratched out his eyes.
Very good. That's right. Now, he is gentle, he is kind. Comes from Mr. Adams.
Old Dog Tray.
Old Dog Tray. Yes, who wrote it, Mr. Adams?
Foster.
That's right, Stephen Foster. He never flunked and he never lied. The catalog of our virtues grows apace. He never flunked and he never lied.
Mr. Kieran. Part of a poem.
Mr. Adams?
Part of a poem?
Yes. What's the source of it? A poem.
Sounds like George Washington.
No. It's Jim Bludsoe, The Prairie Bell. I think it's a... Isn't the poem by John Hay?
John Hay.
Well, I'd get this one wrong. I'll get the next one right. This was a man.
Oh.
Mr. Kieran.
That was Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Julius Caesar. And it was Mark Antony, I believe, saying over the corpse of Brutus.
Huh? Over the corpse of Brutus? Over the corpse of Caesar?
Brutus.
Over the corpse of Brutus.
At the end of the play. The elements so mixed in him that nature might stand up and say, this was
all
a man.
The world. That's right. This was a man.
At the end of the Battle of Philippi.
Good enough. That gives us three out of four. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross points out one very good reason why his messages about Lucky Strike are noted for their shortness.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's just that facts and figures make for brevity. To prove that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, I bring you actual reports from tobacco markets all over the South, reports which show that Lucky Strike pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. Now, that's true this year as every year. For example, the 1941 auctions recently opened in Wilson, North Carolina, and during the first week of sales, the American Tobacco Company paid 23% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 23% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Yes, smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Isn't that a very good reason for making the next package you buy Lucky Strike?
A very good reason indeed, Mr. Cross. And I compliment you again on your brevity. Just 53 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from Jean Cartier of Long Beach, California. This is a question about various characters in literature who were killed in different ways. All I want you to do is name the character. Get 2 out of 3. Which one was killed by being struck with a heavy log? Killed through being struck with a heavy log.
Literature?
Yes, in literature.
The villain in that was hit by John Ridd in...
Lorna Doone?
Lorna Doone.
I don't know.
Carver Doone?
I don't remember it at all.
Ridd strangled him, didn't he?
He wrenched a piece of a limb out of a tree as he went by and then went after this fellow.
You made him out very convincing, Mr. Chair. The one I was thinking of was Cyrano de Bergerac.
Wasn't
he killed with a heavy log at the end of the play?
With a piece of firewood that was dropped on his head out of a window.
Firewood, yes. Perhaps if I said that might have made it clearer.
Cleared the whole thing.
I think I'm going to accept your answer, Mr. Kieran, in lieu of not having a reference book here. It sounds right to me. Now, which one was crushed to death by a gorilla he had freed from its cage?
Jimmy Durante. No.
No.
Tarzan.
No.
I'm on the right track.
Which character was crushed by a gorilla that he had freed from its cage? You're just joking, Mr. Levant. Mr. Taylor?
Did the man have a name, the gorilla?
Well, who was he?
Well, the gorilla was Beanie, or by a story by Rudyard Kipling. Called, I think, An Error in the Fourth Dimension.
Now, I don't know that at all. That's quite possible. That sounds like a Kieran to me. It might be true.
Yes, it is.
The one I was thinking of is the character in The Hairy Ape, Eugene O'Neill's play.
Oh, that's right.
Doesn't he let the gorilla out of his cage and he's crushed to death by him? Mm-hmm. How about this one? Which character was executed at the block by a nobleman who was unaware that the victim was his brother?
Sounds like an opera plot.
Yeah.
It certainly does.
Is that Ernani that Massenet wrote that elegy for?
Trovatore.
What were you saying, Taylor?
No, just jesting.
What were you saying?
Yes, you said you're Trovatore.
Well, yes, that's right.
Well, see, even when I joke, I'm right.
Many a true word, you know. Yes, who is the character? Mr. Kieran, do you remember the name of the character, Mr. Levant?
In the Marx Brothers presentation of Il Trovatore, I don't remember that. In the one night at the opera.
I don't remember it. The character who was executed is...
The Hunchback?
Manrico.
Manrico, that's
that
right. Manrico.
Yes, well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one, gentlemen? From W.A. Mudge. This is an extremely interesting question. We're going to have a short beauty contest now. I'm going to ask you gentlemen to be the beauty contest judges. We're going to have several selections played, 4 of them, and they should recall to you various beauties, ladies, a fair form divine, and I want you to award 1st, 2nd, and 3rd prizes to them. List them in the order of their beauty, punctitude. Do you get the idea?
I suppose they don't agree.
You couldn't possibly disagree.
Oh. This is not opinion,
I think
it's fact.
No, you'll see that it should be very easy for you. Let's have the first of them. We're going to play them all through, I guess, and then we'll arrange them in order. Let's have 4 compositions played one right after the other. Go ahead. Now, you know that lady. Have you got her picture in your mind? All right, now we'll have the next.
About a girl?
That's a girl. Mr. Adams, Mr. Taylor's girl. And now the next.
Okay.
Got that, Mr. LeBron?
Okay.
All right. And now the 4th and last selection that should describe a famous beauty.
Okay.
All right. Now we have 4 ladies described in those musical compositions. Mr. Taylor, do you want to start us off?
Yes.
I think you can work it out together.
Oh, yes. First prize should go to number 3, who is Venus.
Is Venus? Yes, no question about that. The goddess of beauty. Any objection?
And 4th prize...
Pardon?
...should go to number 4, who is the witch in Hansel and Gretel.
Yes.
Oh, I like her. She's cute.
I know, but...
It's taking anything you can get these days.
You've got 4th and 3rd?
But she's generally played by a man.
So who is that?
The witch in Hansel and Gretel.
Yes, well, there'd be no question that she wouldn't be in the running in a beauty contest.
No.
How about 2 and 3? Mr. Adams.
Two would not be in the running either.
Well,
I think it was two.
Who was the second?
I think the second was Patty Shaw.
Yes. How would you rate her?
I would rate her quite low, except by her own description.
I rate her third.
Rate her third.
Clementine third.
Second. That's what she said.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right.
Mr. Levant?
Venus first, which is from Tannhauser. Clementine second, and then the Gilbert and Sullivan Mr. Adams one. That's third, and the Witch.
And
which I wanted number one.
Would there be any objection to the way in which Mr. Levant has rated these ladies?
Only to his manner.
I think that'd be about right. All right, how about this one? From Sylvester Salamone of Corona, Long Island. This is about ghosts. Get 2 out of 3. What ghost in a play or movie was offended? The ghost who was offended. Mr. Kieran.
The ghost of Hamlet's father. See, it is offended. It stalks away.
That's right. That gives a chapter and verse. Why was it offended, Mr. Kieran?
They spoke to it.
Horatio suggested stopping it by force.
Yes. He implored it to speak, and then they approached it, and one of them made a pass at it with his sword.
Yeah, that's right. And he was offended. Now, how about the ghost who made a transatlantic crossing? A ghost that made a transatlantic crossing, Mr. Levant.
The ghost goes west.
The ghost goes west.
Robert Sherwood and that wonderful French director. René Clair.
Yes, that's right. Robert Donat.
Robert Donat,
directed by René Clair. That's right. Now, what ghost won a championship fight? Mr. Levant again.
Mr. Jordan. In Mr. Jordan, Mr. Montgomery becomes the body of K.O. Murdoch after Murdoch is shot.
Yeah.
So his spirit becomes he becomes Mr. Murdoch.
I'm way behind you on
this. Would you mind doing that over again?
That's the correct answer. That's the correct answer. You'll find it in Here Comes Mr. Jordan. Now, gentlemen, here's one from W. Shack of this city. Again, we're going to call on the help of Mr. Kahn, our studio pianist. Now, listen carefully to this. The studio pianist is going to play a phrase on one note from a familiar composition. That is from four of them, as a matter of fact.
Familiar to whom?
I could play that. You'll see.
Let's hear
Now, this is known, I believe, as an expectant phrase. Does that mean anything to you, Mr. Taylor? It's sort of a build-up. Makes you want to hear the rest of it. Are you going to hear just this one note? Repeat it. And name the composition from which it comes. Is that clear?
Yeah.
All right. Let's
have
the
room.
I think you can hear it better. That seems to be right, Mr. Levant. What is the...
Tchaikovsky, the opening of the Fourth Symphony to trumpet.
Very good.
That's right.
Is that right, Mr. Taylor?
It's also the opening of Mendelssohn's Wedding March. From the Midsummer Night's Dream music.
I didn't hear it that way.
No?
Not that
Mr.
way.
Adams says no, Mr. Taylor. That's settled.
Well, I can answer that.
Stick to Tchaikovsky. Well, that's quite right. Thank you, Mr. Taylor and Mr. Levant. That seems very good. Now, to get a little harder, let's have the second one.
Go on,
is this easy?
Well, if it's that easy, Mr. Taylor, which I know, you take it. It's Beethoven.
It's
go ahead.
Beethoven.
Yes.
Seven.
The seventh. Apparently, these things are easy, Mr. Taylor.
It takes a musician of exquisite sensitivity
to get it.
Maybe you mean one.
Well,
you've got two.
Bat that one back at him, Mr. Levant.
Well, I would say that these are the kind of things that are usually... for those parties where you get a big album of records if you get them. And they
not on this
get
program.
Yeah. You don't get any records?
No records?
No records. Now, in the next case, gentlemen, we're going to have two notes played together. Just to make it a little harder or perhaps a little easier. Go ahead.
That's easy, but I want Mr. Taylor to get it.
That's Mr. Kieran.
Mr. Kieran.
Sounds to me like chopsticks.
No.
Gee, that's what I thought of.
Sure it is. That'll fit right in.
Mr. Levant,
do you know?
No.
Ralph Street, Sibelius.
That's right.
Oh,
did you know that?
It's a part I don't like.
Ralph Street, Sibelius. I bet you dislike it even more now, Mr.
Don't get offended, John. That's chopsticks.
On this program, it's the Ralph Street of Sibelius. And that gives us 3 out of 3. And now the fourth and last, gentlemen. Mr. Taylor.
The Lost Chord.
The Lost Chord, yes. I should think that would be the one that the rest of us would know. I know, the only one I got.
I don't have to repeat what I said before.
That gives us 4 out of 4. Thank you. Now I think you'll have time for this one from William S. Goodhue of Belmont, Massachusetts. Where in literature did a teacher use each of these disciplinary measures? One, a class of boys is kept in from the big game of the season. Where does that occur? Mr. Levant.
Mr. Chips.
Yes.
For 5 straight generations there. Those little boys, they're always kept in every succeeding generation.
Yes, it gets sadder and sadder as you tell about it. And where in literature did a teacher make the pupil sit with the girls? Apparently this is a matter of discipline. Mr. Taylor?
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Yes, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. That's right. Did it turn out to be a punishment?
No, because that's how I met Becky Thatcher.
That's right, that's right. What a nice grin crept over your face, Mr. Taylor. See, you enjoy that sort of reading. Now, in the third case, the pupil is made to wear a sign reading, "Take care of him, he bites." Where would you find that?
That's in Dickens, I believe.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Where?
That's in David
Copperfield. Boys Hall.
David,
that's right. It's in David Copperfield. Nickleby. Yes, but this quotation is not from Nicholas Nickleby, but from David Copperfield. That's quite right, gentlemen. Gives us 3 out of 3. And now Mr. Cross has a theory about cigarettes.
It's more than a theory, Mr. Fadiman. It's plain fact. The amount of enjoyment you get out of a cigarette depends on the kind of tobacco that goes into it. The better the tobacco, the better the smoke. That's why it means so much to you that the American Tobacco Company consistently pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf.